If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. And Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke are here from Chicago Inno. They come by from time to time. Boys, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So, let's just cop to it right away. We've been together for about the past hour now because we're recording a series of holiday programs, too. So the Business Lunch is going to have a very Inno Christmas.
Yeah, tune in for Christmas when we do Real or Fake Startup with Steve Bertrand.
And so Real or Fake Startup, you guys have to listen to this because they present these different startups, and we have to figure out whether or not they're all outrageous, and whether they are real or not. I just really want to tell the one.
That's the best part about the startup space, is that every day there is a new fake sounding startup that just raised $10 to $20 million.
So, I mean, you know, I don't want to. Not that people are going to be sitting in pins and needles at their Christmas dinner table wanting to hear, but give me a fake one that we didn't get to. Do you have one that
we can do a quick
or a real
tease,
one that wouldn't?
Would you be interested, listeners, in Parm to Table, an on-demand delivery startup for chicken parm? Just dial up Parm to Table. It's a mobile app raising a lot of money right now, and it will bring you a chicken parm sandwich. Parm to Table.
Does that exist?
You'll have to tune into a very Inno Christmas to find out.
And I'll let you know as soon as we know when it's airing, but it'll be sometime Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. A very Inno Christmas. I think it's the first ever in Chicago.
First ever.
That's right.
All right. So the boys are here, and Chicago Inno follows the innovation sort of scene in the city. And one of the things that people are talking about this week was an announcement really late last week. Airbnb has been this, you know, worldwide phenom in the past few years, but they've never really charged the full tax that Chicago hotels have to charge, which is, you know, unfair to Chicago hotels. Well, they tried to fix that last week, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. Airbnb announced last week that it is offering, it is now collecting the full hotel tax. To date, they were collecting about 4.5. That was their kind of, hey, we'll play ball a little bit. But the full hotel tax is about 16.7. So now they're collecting the full tax. They said, listen, we want to help build Illinois, make it stronger together. They're playing ball. They're acquiescing.
Wait. Do we believe, is that really why they're doing it? Or was the government about to come down on them?
Well, I think that's why they're doing it. I think it's a little bit of both. There are two strategies that these startups take to expansion when you're kind of navigating this tricky regulatory line. One is like Airbnb, you play ball, right? This is a little win. You can't spend a lot of resources arguing, going back and forth and fighting this. Or you take the Uber approach and you fight tooth and nail on everything. You say, no, this is who we are. This is who we operate. We're just going to come into new markets. We're not going to pay attention to the black and whiteness of the legislation. We're just going to plow right through.
Yeah, it's actually a really fascinating decision, at least to me, because these sort of giant tech startups, the key word is disruption. Right, and they're trying to disrupt the exact industry that Airbnb just sort of agreed to pay this bigger tax to. So it's kind of an odd decision, especially like Will said, when some similar companies like Uber, which are really going doing everything they can to not pay that tax, and really for the most part, Uber has kind of gotten its way. I mean, it's had to give and take a little bit, but Uber's kind of taken over Chicago as it's wanted, and Airbnb has kind of gone a different route and said it's going to totally play ball.
Right. So there's not really a difference in scenarios, is there? I mean, Uber is fighting city to city, different regulations and tax structures in every city, just like Airbnb. So it must just be a decision at the top.
Yeah. And why I'm, you know, it's funny. When the announcement came out, I said I was disappointed, and we got a lot of feedback. Like, why are you disappointed? Don't you think people should pay taxes? And I was like, yes, of course. But I'm disappointed because honestly, like, I wish it was a home sharing tax. And if it's 16%, 70%, I'm fine with that. But I'm worried that by acquiescing to the hotel tax, they put themselves under this category that may make it more difficult to innovate within the city because they're now bound to this label. They now play ball with the hotels. And
well,
yes,
they put
Airbnb
themselves in that category. So now if there's a city hotel bed bug ordinance, right?
Exactly.
They probably would apply to them.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things where, again, you know, this is a company making a lot of money in Chicago. Sure, let's find a way to tax it. But I think they should have created a new category, the same way that Uber is getting taxed under the ride sharing tax, not a taxi tax. So that's one of the things I was disappointed in. And the other is Airbnb is generating a tremendous amount of income for economic activity for the city. They are estimated over $200 million brought into Chicago just by existing, by bringing people into the city and being an affordable platform for people to stay. So I'm worried that by making Airbnb more expensive in the short term, you're dipping into that $200 million
number. Yeah, but Best Western could say that too. You know, they could say we're more affordable. So that's Will Flanagan, Jim Dulkey, both here from Chicago Inno. And one of the things, we just got a minute left in this segment and we'll do more coming up, but I want to talk about what you're looking for in the upcoming year, sort of startups that you think might be of note. And I want to talk about Tock. But I'm not sure we can talk about Tock in 1 minute. So why don't you give me anyone have a shorty that we can get started with?
Yeah, I can give you a quick little shorty. Infinicine, basically esports is a really hot category. Twitch, YouTube gaming, esports is the industry of watching other people play video games. Steve, I know you laugh, but it's really popular and it's growing millions and millions.
Here's why I laugh, because I remember that I have a son, but I only see him when he comes up from the basement. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Infinicine is a great Chicago startup that's making it easier for players to broadcast their game. So they're helping grow that industry.
And those guys are making millions of dollars, right? They're playing video games, people are watching, and they're becoming millionaires.
They're athletes. They're new stars. I mean, people follow them like
Robert,
they do LeBron.
Robert Morris is giving scholarships to esport athletes.
It's like guys who write about innovation in Chicago. Will Flanagan, Jim Dulkey. We'll take a break. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Elise Glink will be my substitute coming up over the holidays. But right now, Will Flanagan and Jim Dulkey are here from Chicago Inno. And we're talking about startups to watch. And I said I wanted to have a little time to talk about Tock, because it was like so many things you guys bring up here. I read the words, and the words don't always compute in the brainwaves. So this is an app that would allow you to order your food before you go to the restaurant.
Yeah, this is a web platform that's kind of taking in the restaurant reservation space, kind of in the along the lines of OpenTable, but doing it a little differently, and it's actually really going to help restaurants. So basically, instead of going online and reserving a table at a restaurant, you're actually buying the meal.
That puts some of your skin in the game?
Correct. It's going to cut down a lot on no-shows. So I guess that's one of the big issues that a lot of these restaurants have, is they offer online reservations, but then a lot of the people don't show up, and now you've got empty tables. So what this does is sort of lock you in to make sure, hey, I've already paid for the meal, I definitely have got to come
right
to the restaurant.
So it's not really a service to the customer as much as it is a guarantee to the restaurant.
Yeah, it's a big benefit to the restaurant for sure. And it's nice for the customer too, because right now Tock is working with a lot of the higher end restaurants. It's actually built by the guys who run Alinea, and then one of the Google engineers, so former Google engineer. So it's starting off with some really high end restaurants, so it's guaranteeing a table at a place that might be tough to get into.
That's Tock. All right, so there's a lot of talk, especially in New York, but about these online gambling or gaming or games of skill, and FanDuel is one of them.
FanDuel,
right?
DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports space. And basically this is fantasy gaming that you can play in a day, and it's for real money. And that's where, when there's real money involved, that gets a lot of regulators interested. So New York just announced that FanDuel and DraftKings, the two leaders in the space, can no longer operate. And it's those announcements, which is why I'm watching Sports Lock this year. It's a great daily fantasy startup here in Chicago that's doing something a little different. It's still daily sports with real money involved, but it's bracket-based. So they combine that kind of daily element with a season long you can play with friends. So it's a little more social. But again, this is a really tricky space. It's like online poker was really, really popular, and then the feds said, no, you're illegal, and it disappeared. So they're an exciting startup to watch. You know, we've met the team. They got a great team in Chicago. So, you know, I imagine they're going to stay loose, bounce with it. But, you know, if that legislation changes, they're going to have to change too.
Another startup that is interesting to me, you know, we go through seasons, right? We've been through Thanksgiving. We're in Christmas. Now we have Valentine's Day. And then we have charity auction season. That usually comes up in mid-April through May. And there's this new startup called Gesture, which will allow you to buy the vacation you're never really going to go on by not leaving your table at the auction. Is that it, pretty much?
Exactly. Yeah, it's bringing technology into the fundraising and silent auction space. It's a really cool startup. It's formerly Auctions by Cellular. They rebranded this year, launched in 2011, and basically what they do is they provide a platform for you to sort of bid on that item in the gallery and sort of, you know, bid on that vacation without having to, you know, actually go and do it. It makes it very easy, right in the palm of your hand.
So it's for people who are physically at the online or the charity auction, but they don't have to get up
And since they've launched, they've done like more than 2,000 events. They've raised more than $170 million. I mean, they've worked with the Ronald McDonald guys here in Chicago. So they're really making waves here locally and then across the country. And it's a really interesting platform and in a space that is not really one for technology.
Yeah, exactly. And that's some of the startups we like to talk about, right? I mean, there's the Airbnbs, the Ubers, the Snapchats, the startups that are creating new stuff. And then there's just the businesses that look at a pre-existing space that's maybe been operating a little inefficiently and says, here's some tech to make you faster.
Like buying airline tickets.
Yes.
Is a drag.
Yeah. There's another startup we've got on the list, Options Away, which is a really interesting startup launched a couple years ago. And basically what they let you do is hold and lock in airfare that you find without paying the full price. So you're on the online, you see a really cheap flight, but you're not sure if you're ready to buy it yet. You're still working to see if you can get off of work. You see if your wife can come along with you without having to check any of those details. You could put a deposit down on the flight. A few bucks holds the flight for a certain amount of days, finalize your travel plans. A few days later, you can go in and actually pay the full price of the flight. So this is actually holding in the price before it jumps on you. They've partnered with Expedia and American Airlines, and they're working with some of these bigger partners to incorporate a hold button into their websites.
I think just buying airline tickets, you know, people, I do, you get into this freak out mode, right?
Oh yeah, it's the one purchase that there's like really no turning back from. Like even at a hotel, you can cancel the reservation. You don't even have to put your credit card down to rent a car sometimes. I mean, you can pretty much any of these purchases take it back, but with a flight, it's pretty much final, or you're paying a crazy exchange fee.
And if you're on Expedia, you know, like, oh, two seats left on this plane. Yeah, come on.
Exactly.
That's what they tell. Okay, we've got time for one more, and only because of the name am I going to ask, Herbfront.
Jim, you got that one.
So Herbfront is an interesting startup. They're operating in the medical marijuana space. So basically what they're doing is they're kind of like a Zillow for marijuana entrepreneurs. They're helping marijuana startups find real estate space. So basically there are a lot of rules and regulations as to where marijuana startups can operate. They can't be, you know, so close to a school. There are a lot of different regulations as to where they can operate. And this website, Herbfront, which is based here in Chicago, helps them navigate
okay,
that complicated process.
That's pretty interesting. So the guys, do you know the name of the first Chicago clinic that just opened?
Dispensary 33.
33. Yeah. It was 33. Okay. So they were in here a couple of weeks ago. I was sitting in with Wendy Snyder, and we were talking about that. And finding a spot was real difficult for them because of all the restrictions. But how does Herbfront make much money on this? Because there aren't going to be that many clients.
So I'd imagine, I don't know for sure, but I imagine they're taking a part of the transaction, helping them find their real estate space. And actually, what you're going to see is that this niche industry is going to start to take off in Illinois. We're in the pilot program of the medical marijuana space here in Illinois, so it's still really, really slow going, but it's going to grow. The conditions are going to open up where more people are going to have medical marijuana cards, and there are going to be more medical marijuana entrepreneurs. We're already seeing at least 5 or 6 startups here in Chicago that are operating in the weed space. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this industry grows in Chicago.
Yeah, and you're going to see it splintered into businesses like this that are focused on one thing is because it can change at any hour, any half hour, so you're going to need someone to be hyper-focused on it.
That's Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke, both from Chicago Inno. Thanks, you guys. Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Ian.
Have a great Christmas, you guys.
You too.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
On 720 WGN.
Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Okay, so this next segment is a little out of the ordinary, maybe, or a little more difficult. But, you know, if you follow the news, you know that we have been talking a lot about mass shootings, and there are a lot of these shootings in the workplace. And it was Bill Leff who brought it up last week. He's like, well, what do you do? How do you know? One of the people who has some ideas about how you know and about what you do is Rob Wilson. He is the president and founder of EmployCo, an HR company out of the western suburbs. Am I correct when I say that?
That's right, Steve. Westmont, Illinois.
Well, listen, Rob, welcome to the program. I appreciate you taking time to tell me just a little bit about EmployCo. What do you do?
sure. We're an HR outsourcing company. We help small to mid-sized companies handle their HR issues from start to finish.
Okay. And so, you know, this happens when there's a shooting or, you know what, let's even just say when there's an incident, when there's an ordeal, you know, people say, well, you know, why didn't someone do something, or were there warning signs, or no one had any idea what was coming? I mean, when you are in a workplace situation, let's say you're a supervisor and you have some concerns about an employee, how do you know? What do you do?
Right. I think as a company, your first step is create a policy and make a clear policy and so that all your employees and managers, supervisors know what that policy is, and give them some items to look out for. You know, such as sudden and frequent absence from the workplace, or erratic behavior. Someone's complaining of unfair treatment.
When is it okay for a boss to say to bring someone in and sit down with them and say, "Hey, you know, you seem to be acting a little oddly, and we're worried."
I think once you establish a clear code of conduct and say you have zero tolerance in the workplace. At any point when you see some erratic behavior, I think it's good for a manager to pull that person aside and have that conversation.
What's the conversation, Rob?
Conversation is you need to address their behavior, whether it's an absentee or erratic behavior. If they're being disruptive, there could be a variety of reasons from it, from personal reasons, family issues, but having a clear dialogue and finding out what those issues are.
I see. And so that's the point of having a written policy. If you have a policy that's written, that gives you, I don't want to say cover, but it sort of gives you the entry point to have the conversation.
Well, it does, and it's no difference when you look at your policies and procedures. You've got a procedure for tornado drills and fire drills. You should have a procedure for workplace violence or the signs of workplace violence.
And is that what your company does? Do you help write procedures? Because I'm thinking, you know, if I'm running a sandwich shop, I don't know from procedures.
Right, exactly. So we help them that, you know, in your handbook and procedures. We help create those messages for clients.
One of the things that you suggest is to beware of social postings. A lot of companies kind of track their workers' social network postings. Is that something you suggest people do?
We do. It's no different than in the job interview process. Typically, employers are going to look at your Facebook and Twitter and all your other social media pages. Social media is such a big part of everybody today. It's good to keep an eye on issues.
So you would have a boss, you know, at the end of the day or during the workday, part of the supervisor's function would be maybe to follow your employees on Facebook or Twitter and just keep an eye on what they're posting.
Right. In most cases, it's easy to do, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, to set that program up.
Right. Okay. So here's the thing then, Rob, and that makes, you know, that makes perfect sense. If you have someone who you're concerned about, and like you said, you have to be doing it in advance to be aware of someone you might be concerned about. The problem, the tightrope, I suppose, that bosses would have to walk is it also would sort of pollute the well of goodwill with all of your other employees, right? I mean, I think I'd feel a little hinky about knowing that my bosses were monitoring my Facebook posts to see if I was sort of toeing the line.
Yeah, I think when you address it in your and you be clear on your code of conduct that you have zero tolerance for whether it's moral harassment or any type of workplace violence, as you roll the program out, it's not that you're snooping or following your employees, but you want to provide a safe workplace for your employees.
Yeah, you know, but you understand my balance I'm talking about too, right? Because you want
Absolutely.
It to be a place where people enjoy being and don't feel like they're being watched all of the time.
Right, absolutely.
You're a boss, president, founder of EmployCo. Have you ever been confronted with a situation like this?
You know, we've had some terminations over the years where one in particular where a supervisor didn't quite feel safe. So we had within our policy, he contacted local authorities and just to be there to assist on the termination, because we'd rather be safe than not.
Right. And was that person on your radar before the worries? I guess they were being terminated. Perhaps they were.
Right. They were, and just trying to look out for signs. And you can never, in this environment, you can never be too careful.
I guess people want to be aware, but no, they don't want to ask, or they don't want to offend, and, you know, 99.9% of the people who we might be suspect of have, you know, absolutely no danger, pose no danger. And there's just sort of trying to figure out when to say something and when not to.
Right. And I think that's, you know, as you adopt a policy that anyone can come forward on a confidential basis, you know, your employees need to know that if they come and speak to you, kind of a see something, say something motto of, you know, we have an open door policy, you're not going to be penalized for sharing your fears. I'd rather know about it. And hopefully it becomes nothing than have someone know about the issue and be afraid to talk about it.
And I just think about a guy who gets into the hot dog business because he likes the taste of making hot dogs. And there are just so many more things that business owners and, you know, fellow workers have to be aware of. It just seems to be getting harder and harder. And Rob Wilson, you help us sort that out a little bit. So thanks very much for that. I appreciate you joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Rob Wilson is the president and founder of Employco. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, check the news. Well, we're going to check the traffic, I guess, and then we're going to get the business headlines from Orion. And in a few minutes, we'll talk about your great idea for making money on the web. It can happen, but maybe not the way you think. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion. We'll be watching that and watching the Fed. Tomorrow on the program, John Najarian from CNBC, the Option Monster, will be along, and we'll certainly preview any action from the Fed. And then on Wednesday, our experts continue. Terry Savage will be in here for the first half hour as we await word of what it'll come Wednesday, maybe Thursday. All right, before we do that, let's talk about the Internet and ways that you can become a gazillionaire. Ken Courtwright from the founder of Today's Growth Consultant is on the phone line, and he's been making gazillionaires left and right. Isn't that right, Ken?
I wouldn't say we've been making gazillionaires, but we've definitely helped a number of people make some extra income through the Internet. Yes.
So the idea always was, let's get a website, and then let's figure out a way for people to come to our website, and if enough people do, we'll make money. That really doesn't work anymore, does it?
To a degree, it does. You could say, like, if you take a look at WebMD, WebMD has content brought in by 505 doctors every month, and it stays timely, it stays relevant, and the more content that goes into that website, the more opportunities it has to come up in Google, Yahoo, and Bing search bar. And so the way that site makes money, at least a portion of it, is from what's called a CPM ad. And so when someone opens a page on WebMD, whether they click on an advertisement or not, WebMD just made some money. So if you go to MarketWatch and look at their numbers, they made $500 million last year from advertising, whether anybody clicks on an ad or not. So our concept is we help people build websites, add good content that the world's actually looking for. And if it's good content, it'll go viral, it'll get shared, and the more people that go to that website, the more those ads are displayed, and whether anybody clicks on them or not, that individual, that business, or that private equity fund is making a little bit more money.
So is the website there sort of to attract? Well, let me try to back up and put it a different way. I guess the website would be home base, and then you shoot out from Twitter and Facebook and elsewhere sort of attractions to get people to come back to that home base. Is that a good description?
Yeah, that's actually a really good way to put it. You can use the website itself to get people to come back. So if you have good, solid content, they'll want to save it to favorites and check it out maybe once a week, once a month, like a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But most good websites have the social media platforms, like you just mentioned, like the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the Pinterest. And they're just what we call seeding. And they're putting out little pieces of information, little nuggets, little tips. And if people like what they're reading, there's always a mention that if you'd like to do a deeper dive on this, you can come back to our main website, and then they list that website and it brings them back. But yes, that's probably one of the top movements of how to get people to your website.
I've read, though, in some of your writing, you know, the idea, though, that just getting eyeballs on the screen isn't probably going to be the quickest or best way. It's a lot of it's about data collection or getting email lists, right, that you can then again reach out in a different way to people.
Correct. Yeah, I would say there's many books on this topic, but one of the strongest methodologies to generate revenue online is to use your website as almost a portal to get people to give you their email in exchange for really good quality information. And almost every major website has a newsletter or a weekly video blog. And, you know, if you register for that, they're almost always free. You get to get an exchange of valuable information for your email. And then what those companies do is they say, okay, here is a warm lead for us. This is someone who has shown interest in what we're talking about. And those people, those emails can receive much more tighter niche exclusive information because they know more about them because there's an actual communication, a dialogue via the opted-in email address they've provided.
And if you describe it the wrong way, it can almost sound like you're making, you know, like you're tricking people or you're making a deal with the devil. You know, we're going to find a way to get this data from you. But the fact is you're also offering them something they want, whether it's an email or, you know, continued information about other activities. I mean, it probably works best when it's a fair exchange. And when I say fair, I mean equal on both parts.
Well, I would say it's not even fair. It's much more slanted towards the user or the visitor, meaning if it was 3 to 5 years ago, people would give up their personal email even for a free ebook. But today, you have to offer a tremendous amount of value. Quite often, you have to even offer a product that used to be sold for a couple $100 on your website and offer that now for free in exchange for someone to give you their email. Because the way it is today, that personal email is so valuable because they know you're letting them into, or they're letting you into their life.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to give up a tremendous amount of value on the front end for them to even consider giving you their email. So it is definitely a win-win for both. But I would say in the beginning of that relationship, it slants much more towards the value going to the visitor of that website.
That's Ken Courtwright, the founder of Today's Growth Consultant. Ken, how do people find out more information from you?
We have kencourtwright.com, which is Ken and then court, like you went to court and take a right. kencourtwright.com. We typically take our 600 revenue-generating websites, best case studies the month before, and then we go to that website and do either a video blog or some kind of a newsletter and just show the world what's working on our web properties. So kencourtwright.com.
That's excellent. Hope we can talk again, Ken. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.